Welcome to the Community Conversations podcast, where we believe that world transformation begins with gospel transformation, and gospel transformation begins with discovering the truth about who God is and who you are. And it starts right now.
Welcome to the first episode of the Community Conversations podcast. I've got Noah Chant with me today, and we've got a lot in store for you guys over the coming months and maybe years, but we've been trying to think through sort of systematically because we know where we want to get to in terms of conversation, but I think right now we're going to start with just talking a little bit about the history of Be Love Co., and talk about sort of where we came from, why do we exist as a church and as a community, what led to our conception, and what our journey has been like over the last couple of years.
Yeah, super exciting.
Yeah.
Feels like we've already learned so much. We could probably just end the episode here.
Yeah. Like
we just learned it all.
Exactly. but yeah, I do want to talk about, and I'm glad Noah is here for this, because I want to talk about I guess the conception of Be Love Co. Yeah. And because I think while we've been a church for 3 years now, coming up on about 3 years, in a way our history is goes a lot deeper than that, goes a lot farther than that. And there's been a lot that has led to, I think for multiple people, primarily the Chants, Jamie and Darlene. But there's been a lot that has kind of led to this moment in time where they believed that it was time to launch this thing. So Noah, I'd love for you to maybe speak a little bit to that and just give us a little bit of like kind of your history with your family and where you guys have come from and how it is that you are here doing what you're doing today.
Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously it starts way further back than you'd think in, I want to say it must have been 98 or 99 when my dad was currently in a denomination, but actually got a prophetic word from Dutch Sheets, actually.
Wow.
that where my father and my family's ministry was going, that denomination couldn't go with them.
Whoa. So we're talking like 25 years ago.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 25 or so years ago.
Wow.
Now. And so, and you know, it's amazing because it teaches you, I think, even the reality that you get a prophetic word and I think you're ready for the activation of it.
Yeah.
And sometimes prophetic words are 25 years in the making. You know what I mean? And so, because from there, you know, my dad took a church. We were in the Church of God. My dad took a church in 2000. Which he pastored for
it's about 20 years,
20,
I think.
22, 23 years total.
Wow. Yeah.
And so, you know, I think it's always been on my parents' heart. Well, I'll tell you the thing that's always been on my parents' heart and the thing I think I appreciate the most has always been the reality that they've just always wanted to be a part of what Yahweh was doing in the earth.
Sure.
You know, whether that was denomination or whether it wasn't, it didn't matter. You know what I mean? Wherever he was moving, you know, that's really what they wanted to be a part of. And so, you know, the reality was, I think they went to Chickamauga, which is where the church was, with the thought that maybe that's where it would lead, but not knowing, you know, that would take over 20 years.
Right. Yeah.
Itself.
Yeah. You think you're starting the thing, but that's actually just the thing that leads to the thing.
Yeah, because they, you know, they had some names, some ideas years before, you know, Be Love was in conception.
Yeah.
And I would say that my parents, you know, without getting too much into detail, just there was just a lot of, there was a moment of personal crisis, which led to kind of, I think, a rediscovery for my parents and for my even family as a whole, of the return to original devotion and original love. I believe there's an opportunity for a lot of leaders and a lot of even just believers. You don't have to be a leader, but I feel Yahweh always and periodically throughout your life will open invitations to return back to original love.
Sure.
Why did you get into this in the first place? Why did you get in the ministry? Why did you start serving the Lord?
Yep.
What was that purpose? Because that dies eventually. for a lot of people. You have kids, you have, you know, job, vocation,
yeah,
whatever it may be, that can often die.
Yeah.
And so I think it was a return from my parents to first love, which when they were the ones that came up with the name Be Love Company.
Yeah.
You love know, it. And it was a really to be a desiring to be a people that really gathered around the concept of being like Jesus.
Yeah.
Being love.
Right.
You know, Jesus, obviously, you know, obviously Abba is love. And so I think to even radiate that.
Yeah.
To radiate that fully and fully be that, you know, was kind of the purpose. And it was waiting, you know, I believe Yahweh had to place certain people in specific times. Mm-hmm. And my parents went through a lot of transition in a quick amount of time. Yeah. I think not knowing what that was for,
sure.
Not knowing it was leading to the ability to leave denomination, to really leave the system, to make this kind of long path out. Because, you know, my parents were extremely successful in what ministry was.
Yeah.
Big church, you know, full sanctuary, tons of people coming, great community events, massive building.
Yeah.
You know, all the
budget,
resources.
Budget, they, great budget,
yeah. Yeah, great budget, all the resources, massive staff. Yeah. And so it wasn't a lack of, you know, of like, if you were looking for fulfillment in ministry,
yeah,
they had it.
Sure.
You know, but I think there was more about that. Me and, you know, me and my parents obviously went through a season of not being super close, and Yahweh opened up a pathway, I think, for me and them to regain relationship. Because at the end of the day, like, the heart of our church and the heart of our kingdom family now is fathers and sons.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, a house not built on an established father and an established son, and that can be physical or spiritual. You know, for us, it very much was physical.
Yeah.
But, you know, knowing that that transition from father to son, and hopefully continuing here of you know, father to son, was very vital. And so it was interesting because there was some early talks about that as I kind of came back into the fold of relationship with my family.
Yeah.
But it seemed the more that relationship gathered, the ball kept rolling more and more and more and getting further. And you were, you know, obviously Brian was a part of that.
Yeah.
You know, that whole process too. And you saw it from maybe a different side.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, hearing you talk about like your parents and just their desire to be doing what the Lord is doing,
yeah,
and whatever that looks like, and I can attest to that because I've been with your parents for, I think it was the summer of 2016.
Wow.
Katie and I kind of got connected to your parents, and we there
Eight
was
years.
Just like instant favor, you know, with them,
yeah.
We started working. Officially, actually working, came on staff at right at the beginning of 2017, and I've just seen your parents model that time and time again. That it, they're like, we don't really care what this looks like, as long as it's him, as long as he's in it,
yeah,
as long as we know what he's doing and we can be a part of that. You know,
mm-hmm.
I've heard your dad say a thousand times, I could speak, I could not speak, I could, you know,
yeah,
we could worship, we could sit
we
in silence,
we just want to be in the room,
we just want to be like where he is,
yeah.
And even the humility that your parents had to. They've been in ministry for, you know, 30 years or whatever, at the point where they were like, I think we'll go to like a little ministry school, just kind of take a step back and just go, you know, just learn a little bit more
themselves.
And just kind of relight that fire and just kind of remind themselves that, because you're right, they had the success, they had the big church,
mm-hmm.
the big building, but I think everybody in ministry at some point, hopefully, we'll come to the realization that if it's not about first love, if it's not about just pursuing the heart and the face of Jesus, then that'll never fulfill you in the way that you hoped ministry would when you started.
Yeah, you know? Well, I think you've seen time and time again, I believe almost all leaders, anyone that desires to pastor or lead a ministry, whatever that looks like, oftentimes people initially start pursuing presence and often settle for success.
Yeah. Oh,
you know what
for
I mean?
Sure.
They pursue presence, and then when success comes, you know, there's even a great quote. I can't think of who it's by, but it, you know, it basically says, and you know, take this however you want theologically, but you know, if the devil can't make you fail, he'll make you busy and successful.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Because you know, success comes with. I think it's so attached to the idea of the fear of man of losing success.
Yeah.
And so what you end up doing is you don't actually end up becoming a win person. You don't actually lean in to the spontaneity of the spirit.
Right.
You become attached to who's giving. You become attached to what they're doing. You know, you become attached to how that plays into it. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so, and that just becomes a whole other piece of this.
Yeah. And then at that point, you kind of stop catering to the Lord. You start catering to the people, you know, and that's, I think that's a fast track to, I guess you would call, what's the term? Like a seeker friendly church.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Well, it's the fast track to,
yeah.
Oftentimes ministry now, unfortunately, is this reality of let me grow big so that I can do little.
Sure.
Show up, do my thing. And, you know, and it's amazing to see people, you know, I've watched my parents over the years shift and grow as Yahweh has expanded them.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think there's a thing too, you know, we talk about all, often is growing in the opportunity, because I think earlier would crush you. Growing earlier than that will crush you. And seeing my parents see open doors, pass through them, you know, and it lead us into where we are now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Seeing fulfillment, you know, of all that it's just massive to see people willing to say, I'll give up the big things, you know what I mean, to follow you.
Yeah.
You know,
I'll give up the flashy thing.
Yeah.
The thing that makes me look good on the outside. I'll give that up if there's even the possibility that this will bring me closer to what this is really meant to look like.
Well, it's like Peter, you know, like Peter didn't, like, contrary to what we see in, you know, maybe shows like The Chosen or whatever, it would have more been believed that Peter had a fleet of ships.
Yeah.
As a fisherman.
Yeah. Those guys were probably young, doing just fine.
Yeah. Successful, powerful, you know, probably in a city. And so, you know, I was reading one commentary that said he would have had basically what would be considered like a penthouse suite, you know, in Capernaum.
Sure.
And so, you know, like to basically say, I'm done.
Yeah.
I have a wife and all this, but I'm done. I'm just going to follow presence.
Yeah.
I'm going to follow the man.
Yeah.
Is, you know, it really is. It's not the easiest thing in the world. And oftentimes, unfortunately, it looks easy because we oftentimes don't see people till they're on the other side of it.
Right. How often do you look at a church and you think, like, you know, there's almost a party that wonders, like, well, did you just, like, stumble into this? Or did you just, you know? And a lot of times, like, the churches that we look up to the most, if you were to talk to their leaders, they'd say, man, you have no idea.
Yeah.
You have no idea what this journey has been like,
right.
What we've gone through.
Yeah, we've seen the fruit
to get to this. Yeah, right now you're looking at the harvest, man, but you have no idea the seed that we've sown.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, it's even one of the things, you know, I talked to about with the staff even not too long ago, is that there are a multitude of people that are invited into your harvest time. But I believe that Yahweh places very specific people into your seed time.
Sure.
You know, and tons of people come into the harvest time and go, this is fantastic. Oh my gosh, we love this. This has been everything. There's nine or 10 people, you know what I mean, with, you know, ditch diggers that are like, yeah, I've got, you know, scars and wounds and my back's out now. And, you know, I got sun blisters because we were part of the seed time of this moment, you know, and those are very specific. And I even feel that a part of the transition from where my parents were into, you know, really, you know, us starting, you know, Beloved Company is this idea of, okay, now the seed time people are here.
Yeah.
Now the seed time people are, you know, with us, and we can actually do the planting that needs to be done to create the right type of harvest.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so good. Yeah. I think a great example of that is Bethel Church.
Yeah.
Who we like a lot about them, a lot about what they do. And Bill Johnson is, you know, Chris Valentin, we love those guys. And I think a lot of people have heard of Bethel and they see what they're doing to change the world right now, but they don't realize what they've gone through to get to where they are.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, what they, because before they were in, you know, the building they were in, they met in that theater.
Yeah.
In like downtown Reading.
So many
for
wild things.
I think 10 years.
Yeah, and you know,
they were
like,
nobody.
Yeah, part of the Chris Valentin podcast. You know, I mean, when he took over Bethel from when they moved, you know, they were having incredible moves of the Spirit, and all the elders had to take second mortgages out on their homes to pay the staff.
Yeah.
Now imagine seeing what you want as success and then also seeing the failure of being able to take care of your own people.
Right.
And to push through that because you know that what you're doing is the right thing.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like such a measuring stick of...
I think you really, really have to have a well-defined and articulated understanding of what success is going to be for you.
Yeah.
Because because it looked like they were failing on all, just about all fronts, except spiritually.
Yeah.
But from a worldly standard...
It was a total failure.
It looks like absolute foolishness to say, hey, why don't you guys take out a couple of second mortgages?
Yeah.
I know we're crazy behind. We're, you know.
Yeah, no one can be
paid.
We're
drowning in
debt. They're moving from weekly to monthly paychecks.
Yeah,
just trying to make sure they could cover for the whole month.
We're drowning in debt, but we think the Lord is in this. And so, like, will you stick this out long enough to actually see the fruit of what, you know, what we're sowing here?
And there's such a, I think there's such a thing of, I think there is just... such a thing of him in, I believe, his grace giving you opportunity to be stretched so that you can understand trust.
Oh, yeah.
You know, how much stretching is done in that so that when anything does happen, you're unfazed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you look at a guy like Bill Johnson whose wife passes away. He preaches that Sunday.
Yeah.
And it's like...
And like one of the most... incredible things I've ever heard from anybody, you know?
No, and it's wild because you think, how can you do that? It's because my whole life has been, or a lot of my life has been stretching.
Yeah.
So now I have so much trust that I'm not, you know, I mourn correctly. I discern correctly. I can process correctly.
Yeah.
You know, and you've got to come on the other side of that stretching and see it as a gift to build trust because oftentimes what Yahweh wants to do through us without trust will crush us.
Yeah.
And that's not just in ministry.
Yeah.
That's in your business. That's in your family. That's with your children and all these different things. Like you know, there's an opportunity for crushing if you're not willing to accept the stretching as a grace.
Right. Yeah. And to lean into that.
Yeah.
Almost like voluntarily leaning into that, knowing what it will produce in you.
Almost living in more excitement
of
the downtime than the uptime.
Yeah.
You know, like it's like the, you know, it's, you know, to quote something incredibly spiritual, it's like The Office, you know, when Andy says, I wish you, you know, knew you were in the good times. In the good times.
Yeah.
And oftentimes, you know, you see like the hard seasons and then people look back at them with joy.
Right.
Because you end up going, man, that made me like, that made me salt.
Yeah.
That made me salt of the earth.
Yeah.
This is great and I'm happy. And, you know, people now, you know, obviously Bethel's doing quite well.
Sure.
But the reality is there something about that stretching that I think even maybe the apostles felt in those 3 years. I often wonder how much they looked back with fondness of not having to be the guy.
Right. Yeah.
Like, I don't have to be the guy. Jesus is the guy, and I'm just in the room. And that's awesome.
Yeah.
I don't have to explain a parable. I don't have to heal anyone.
Yeah.
I'm just, you know, and many people want to be on stage. Many people want to have the best business.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you become the guy, you eventually go, I actually would like to be in the room a little bit.
Yeah. And you know? I hear that. I hear that from people who have become the guy wherever they are. And they think, man, if I could go back, I wish I could go back to my days in obscurity and just kind of be on the side.
Yeah.
Serving and helping, you know.
Yeah, when even Jesus is almost, he almost, you know, throughout the gospel does the same thing of telling people, don't tell anyone I healed you.
Yeah.
Don't tell anyone that I did this.
Right.
You know, let's keep it quiet for now.
Yeah.
So I can get done what I need to get done. And I even think, you know, it was a major piece of even, you know, for my parents in this transition of the church, you know, the current often church model. Not that I want to harp on it, but the often current Western church model is church is built upon good pastors.
Yeah.
Good leaders. Right? Like most of us, you know, I can't tell you the amount of times no one says church names. They say pastor's name. You know, this is so-and-so's church.
Yeah.
Or this is so-and-so's church. You know, and I think even mom and dad's, you know, concept of this was it really being about Jesus.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It not being about the face of a leader, but it being about a people group gathered around presence.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And really going after that. Doesn't mean we don't have leadership. Doesn't mean we don't believe in apostolic authority.
Yeah,
and we don't operate in the fivefold. All those things.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it's unto presence.
Right.
Not unto an image. You know what I mean? And
that's,
I think, kind of that motion from, okay, this is denomination and this is what the current model's telling me it has to look like.
Yeah.
But this is not you know, what Yahweh's mm-hmm. telling me it's supposed to look like.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk about, so we're about three years in now.
Yeah. In December.
December. That's hard to believe. That's wild.
I know. It feels like it's gone by in a minute.
It feels like a couple months ago we had that first night here.
Yeah. That first service meeting. And you're like, yeah, oh, yeah. This is it.
Wow.
This is the transition.
Yeah.
And half those people aren't here.
Yeah. when you were talking about trust, and then I want to talk more about that, but when you were talking about trust, it made me think, and this is something I've been thinking lately, is this thought that I'm coming to realize that I don't really think or know if trust can even exist in the absence of testing.
Mm.
Because how often do you think you trust the Lord until he says,
sure.
Well, let's see about that.
Yeah.
You know, I would have told you for years that I trusted the Lord with my finances because I'm a good Christian. And I know, sure. I know that that's...
I tithe. I give 10%.
Yeah, I give 10% until all of a sudden he says, you know, hey, would you give $1,000 to that person who's having trouble? And it's like, that's the testing that actually proves that you trust him.
Right. Well, especially when all I have is $1,000.
Yeah, right.
I don't have $10,000. You know what I mean? You want me to give $1,000, I've got $1,000.
Yeah.
You know, it's relatable to even like, you know, having a baby. I think there is something so special about however long it is, that time period of trying.
Mm-hmm.
How special would a baby be if you just said when you wanted to turn it on and have one, you had one?
Right. Yeah.
But you talk to someone that's been trying to have a baby for 6 years, 5 years.
Yeah.
And they have a baby.
Yep.
That baby is, you know what I mean? Yeah. Talk about helicopter parent in a way, but it, you know what I mean? There's just like, dude, this is my, you know, this is my freaking kid.
Yeah.
You know, and there's something about that testing that, and I think, like I said earlier, it should be exciting because it means that he's trying to promote you. And that doesn't mean like promotion, even I think in worldly successful terms.
Right.
It may not mean, you know, your business grows a thousandfold. It can mean anything.
Yeah.
But he is trying to do something in you.
Right.
Because he does want to do something through you.
Sure. Yeah.
And what he wants to do through you without trust will crush you.
Yeah.
And it has to come through that stretching, that testing
of
man. Like now I feel like I can really do the thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's so good. I've heard it said that, you know, his discipline is so that you can survive his blessing.
Wow. That's
you know, good. It's like what he wants to do in and through you is so good.
Yeah.
That absent of discipline and testing and stretching.
Yeah.
It'll crush you.
Yeah. And the nice thing about the real true gospel, the gospel of, you know, righteous sonship, is the reality that discipline, when you understand the kingdom, is done through relationship.
Yeah.
So discipline often doesn't even actually end up feeling like discipline because it's a conversation between a father and son and not this act of disobedience between, you know, servant and deity.
Right.
You know, it's a totally different concept.
Yeah.
You know, it's so much deeper where you go, man, this really is for me.
Yeah.
This isn't just to see what I'll do or to get a reaction. This is really for me.
Right.
Because that's what he's telling me.
Yeah. I think, and that's something I've thought about, like, as a father, is how in the world do you replicate that? Because I think that's my goal as a parent, as a father, is to look at what he does. Look at what are his methods of raising me up as a son. And how do I replicate that with my relationship with my kids? But he has this way of, like we say, discipline. I think depending on, you know, what your history looks like, discipline might mean one thing for one person and something else for somebody else. But when, like, his version of discipline is, I'm going to speak to you in a way that is going to reveal truth, but it's also going to make you feel more loved and seen than you've ever been.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
big because, well, you realize that the trust he's trying to build in you ultimately is simply the fact that he loves you.
Right. Yeah.
And the trust he's trying to get through you is that I'll do anything with you and through you because I love you.
Right.
And so even the discipline is to teach you that he loves you.
Right.
Yeah. Which is like, it feels backwards.
Right.
You know what I mean? In a way, it is similar to us and our real children in the sense we discipline them so that they're not the worst to everyone else around us, or they're not, you know, doing the wrong thing.
You
want to
set them up for success.
You want to set them up as adults, because you love them more than anyone else in the world. Yeah. And that's that. It's that same exact thing. And you even see it in Mark's gospel when Jesus gets baptized. Uh-huh. He's getting ready to go into the ministry of saving the world. And the only declaration that Yahweh has is, this is my son, my beloved son, in whom I'm well pleased.
Yeah.
That's the only declaration.
Right.
No, he's been given the gift of authority of everything. And, you know, that stuff comes. But the starting point has always been, you're accepted, you're loved, and I'm actually pleased with you.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what that, like, trust is. As you go, oh, the trust you're trying to build is me is that through my failures, or through what I think is my failures, my successes, my ups, my downs, whatever it is, our relationship is continually the same. It's peace.
Yeah.
Peace with God.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah. I love that. That's so good. I feel like I need to switch gears a little bit, because I could talk. I think we'll keep going all day. Hours. I know.
We're starting a second podcast that plays right after this one.
It's just all the leftover thoughts that we couldn't get out.
Called the leftovers.
Leftovers.
Well, you might have a podcast here.
As I said before, we're 3 years in, just about, in Be Love Co. And let's talk a little bit about each of those 3 years, because I think it's kind of become evident, at least to us, that each of those years almost meant something different to us.
Big time.
You know, like the big year time. 3 versus year 2 versus year 1. And I want to talk about that a little bit, and just talk about a little bit of really the intentionality of the Lord in that, but also, like, what has this journey really been like from our perspective and our point of view?
Yeah. Yeah, we'll start with year one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I wrote a letter. Well, not a letter. I wrote some thoughts down that I spoke to our family a couple weeks ago. I was sitting in the prayer room thinking about it. And I really feel like Yahweh just even began to open my eyes more to just how much of a transition we've been through in 3 years. It is, you know.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for love, it'd feel like whiplash.
Sure.
But, you know, because there's love in it, it doesn't feel that way at all. And because you love what you do, you know.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, I feel like year one, you know, for us, if I could label it, really was Exodus.
Yeah.
This mass, like, Exodus out of the system. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to, you know, it's almost religion and legalism oftentimes feels like a drug. And you have to detox.
Yeah.
You know, it's why, like, I oftentimes try to use the word, like, systemic religion. Because it feels like it's built into every fiber of what you do, how you think.
Yeah.
You know, and so year one, I think, was us really learning, okay, this is what that is, and this is what you're not going to be. You know what I mean? In a sense, it was this exodus of pioneering out of it, or more, I guess, leaving it and just taking a year to go, okay, this is you know, this is what we're not, and we're trying to figure out what it is, and all these different, you know, this is apparently who we're not going to be, and just figuring all that out, because you have all the fancy terms. You can use the fancy terms of non-denominational, independent, you know, or church plant, you know, all these words that are, you know, just church words, and they sound great until you get out, and you're like, okay. You know, we I feel like my parents really moved out on the word of the Lord. And that often comes piece by piece.
Yeah.
Not whole puzzle.
Yeah.
It really does.
Oh,
it's like,
absolutely.
You know, like, we got, like, the piece for the first 3 months and the piece for the second 3 months and, you know, 3 months and 3 months.
Yeah.
It's like, and even it's like it moves quarterly.
Yeah. Like, where we are now is different from, I think, where we thought we were going to be.
Oh, by leaps
because,
and bounds.
Because, like, while we were... like exiting, like you called it the Exodus, while we were doing that, like, you can't necessarily, like, strip yourself immediately from everything that you'd been carrying, that you had picked up in, you know, the, like, that systemic religion that you talked about.
When you can't, I think even when we left, the idea of success was still the same as it was in religion and legalism.
Sure.
Which it doesn't have a label like a denomination does.
Yeah.
But the goal is still, in a sense, big church, big numbers.
Yeah.
You know, this and that, and music and all the stuff that comes, which isn't bad things.
Right.
But it's not the goal.
Right.
And I think, you know, for a while it still was. Mm-hmm. It just was supposed to not be denominational, but you can't take the label. Like, you can take the name off of McDonald's, you go in, you still get a Big Mac.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And so, like, you can't just, like, there's a whole exodus out of every piece of it in your, as a person, as a leader, everything. And even, like, the people that are on the journey with us.
Yeah.
God bless, you know, the kingdom family we have now.
Yeah.
That, you know, pulled up their bootstraps, because not a lot of people did.
Yeah.
Not a lot of people did.
You
know, we started, it's rare to start a church plant twice, or, you know, at the time, a church, the idea of a church plant, twice the size as you have it now. Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And God bless the people that said, like, we're with, and that's the thing too, I think, about the group of people we have, the kingdom family we have, are really a group of people that have said, we're with what Yahweh's doing.
Yeah.
And whatever that looks like.
Right.
And man, the first year was such an exodus of figuring that out.
Yep.
Whew, it was a lot.
Yeah.
And it was really, really dying. It's really dying to self.
Sure.
To your self-image of what this will be.
Yeah.
And that leaning in, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it really leads into, you know, year two.
Yeah. Yeah. I think something you and I talk about often, and it's one of my, I remember a couple of years ago, there was a morning where I was reading John 6. You know John 6. We talk about this all the time. All and it's time. John 6 is one of the most fascinating chapters in the whole Bible to me. Because you start off reading, and it's the story that everybody knows, feeding of the 5,000.
Yep.
Everyone knows that story. But what you don't necessarily realize, because I love what you say too, like, the Bible is not meant to be like broken up, you know, these read a couple verses here, and then read John this chunk here, and it's like, actually
didn't have chapter marks and verse marks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's a love
letter. Those guys didn't have, you know, even like ancient Greek, you know, those guys would have been writing in Aramaic. They didn't have like the grammar, punctuation
stuff.
They didn't have periods and chapters, and so
and if it was in Hebrew, it was backwards.
Yeah. But what I love about John 6 is you really get a good taste of how Jesus viewed ministry and how he defined success.
Mm-hmm.
Because what you've got is he feeds and it says 5,000 people, and I think typically we know that they would have been counting men in that 5,000.
Yeah.
And so really there might have been 15,000, because
wasn't
including
everyone had one wife and one kid,
you know. And so he does that. He feeds the 5,000. Everyone's amazed. And, you know, he kind of sends his disciples on the way, and they go across the lake. They get to the other side, and the next day, and it says the group from the previous day that caught up to him, because they were like, they wanted to follow where he was going. They were like, they couldn't believe what just happened. Not just his teaching, but the fact that he fed
everybody,
you know, fed that many people with nothing. And so they catch up to him, and they're like, hey, like, what do we have to do to follow you?
Yeah, give us the real give us the real juice of what's going on.
Yeah.
Here.
And he's like, oh, well, if you want to follow me, I guess you're going to have to eventually eat my flesh and drink my blood. And the crazy thing is that John gives no indication that Jesus expounded on that.
No.
He just kind of left it at that.
Jesus had horrible hermeneutics and exegesis.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
He was not the well-trained communicators of our age.
Yeah.
Today.
People would look at him as the worst pastor in the history of pastors. Honestly.
He did
everything
backwards.
Because if you keep reading, that the entire crowd, they were, you know, and I don't know if they consider all 10 or 15,000, whatever, if they would have considered all of them as like followers at that point, while they were following him to a degree, they all left him because they were offended.
Yeah.
And all he was left us with the 12. And even he turned to the 12 and he says, what do you guys think? Are you still in, or do you want to go too?
Yeah. Do you want to leave with them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're like, I don't
get you, but nothing else has been working like you do.
Right.
You know, how oftentimes would this journey be easy if we just went, I don't get any of it.
Yeah.
But the Holy Spirit does. And so
Yeah.
Where else am I going to find eternal life?
Right.
You know, which is what they say, you know.
Right. Yeah.
You're the key to eternal life. And, you know, it's amazing because it's the first real sign, you know, and like I said, I've spoke on this, is it's the first real sign that, like, sometimes the real gospel and the kingdom doesn't look like success in the way we do, because that ends with 5,000 left and only 12 remain. You know,
he lost so many people that day.
Yeah,
but
he lost 5,000 partners his ministry in a day. No one's on the email list anymore.
Yeah,
you know,
Think about the budget. You know,
but everything's gone.
But then you have to question, well, how did Jesus define success in ministry?
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think that was an unsuccessful day.
No,
I think that he was just unwilling to withhold truth for the sake of gaining followers.
Sure.
Which is, I think, is what you see a lot today.
Yeah.
I think, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, and I think, you know, the great revelation there is the reality that the 5,000 were just unknowing as the 12. The difference was the 12's proximity to Jesus.
Yep. That's so good.
You know what I mean? That's the only difference.
Yep.
Is they didn't maybe understand what was happening or the revelation or what he was talking about, but they knew him.
Yep.
And that was enough.
Yep.
To just stay.
Yep.
You know, there was so much close proximity to Jesus, they go, I don't get any of this.
Yeah.
There's days I feel like that. There's days I'm, you know, studying stuff and reading stuff, and I'm like, well, this makes me feel like I'm psychotic.
Yeah.
To even want to say this.
Yeah.
But I know that I know you.
Right.
And I know who you are, so this must be you. And what an idea that you're, you know, it really teaches us, I think, and shows us that you can get through anything if you carry proximity to him.
Yeah.
Any revelation, any issue, you know, any what to them probably would have seemed like a loss, because I bet their definition of success back then was the fact that 5,000 people just heard Jesus preach.
Right. Imagine you're one of the 12 and you're like,
we did.
You've never seen a crowd like this gathered. Yeah. No, the world has never seen a crowd gathered like that to hear a preacher preach.
Yeah. You know? If there was social media, they were writing back to old friends like, you know, screw you. Look, I made it. You know, all the stuff. They're posting on social media, right, humbly. You know, we got 10,000 people here today. No big deal. Just a day's work for the Lord.
Right. It's all for the ministry, right?
Yeah, all for the ministry. And then, boom, you're back down.
All of a sudden, everyone's gone and you're like, Jesus, what?
Yeah.
What? Like, can you not be so weird?
You just ruined it.
For 5 seconds, can you not be so weird right now just, and say such weird things?
Yeah, you ruined the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And you realize, too, the spontaneity of Jesus, because that stuff just came.
Yeah.
Like, the wind moved. It's like he says to Nicodemus.
Yeah.
You know, you don't know where the wind's coming or where it's going.
Yeah.
But you feel it on your face.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so you know. You know where it's at, and that is, you know, and I even think that really even ties into year one.
Yeah.
You know, the reality of we were in such an exodus, you're just kind of going, okay, don't really have the full thing laid out.
Yeah.
You can get all the great logos and marketing packets and all the, you know, great social media posts you want, but all we knew is that we desired presence, and we knew that the amount of intimacy and the amount of intimacy and encounter we were wanting wasn't happening where we were.
Sure.
So we had to go follow it to find it.
Yeah.
But on that journey, like, year one was couldn't tell you.
Yep.
You know, you're faking it till you make it, but couldn't tell you.
Yeah. So if year one is sort of defined as our exodus from that system, talk about year two a little bit. What do you think the Lord was doing in us?
Yeah, I mean, I think year two was really sifting through all the things. Like, if it could be labeled, it could be really labeled as a year of what we're not.
Sure.
Year two was, or at least the first half, I would say. The first half of year two was really continuing to learn some pieces of who we're not.
Yeah.
You know, maybe language we're not going to use.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, you know, and even dying to dreams of maybe what we thought it was supposed to look like.
Yeah.
You know, I think most of the times, you're going to have to die to old dreams to dream the ones that Yahweh has for you.
Yeah.
you know, and there's old dreams that are from him.
Sure.
Doesn't mean there isn't old dreams from him.
Yeah.
But we had to die, I think, to a lot of dreams that weren't from him, mm-hmm. to dreams that were. And although they're drastically different, even only a year and a half later, they're more fulfilling.
Yeah. Yeah.
They seem like a death in the moment.
Yeah.
But, you know, year two was really a lot of that. You know, I think for Be Love, even, you know, there was so much, you know, even at the end of, you know, I mean, I'm jumping into year three, but even year two was the last year of our ministry school.
Yeah.
And that was dying to a dream.
Yeah.
Like that was not doing foundations was never a thought process on this journey.
Right. Yeah. We thought that was something that we would just carry.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. And it was successful.
Yeah.
We didn't end it because there was no one that would want it to do it.
Right.
Or it wasn't working or there was no curriculum. Like it was doing very well.
Yeah.
But it also was a dream that had to die to dream the dreams that Yahweh has for our family, our kingdom family.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's what I think year two was so about, all these kind of systems and things we had in place that were still so part of the system. I mean, things as simple as membership.
Yeah.
The term membership.
Right.
There's no membership in a family.
Yeah.
There's sons and daughters and mothers and fathers. There's no member. I don't wait till my son turns 18 and make sure that, you know, he's willing to give 10% of the first of his income.
Yeah.
He's willing to serve twice a month. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And then he gets a bedroom.
Yeah. I think it was you two that pointed out, like, look at the early church, read Acts, and to them, membership was, do you believe what we believe?
Yeah. You know? You have faith in, you know, in Yeshua the Christ.
And so they had these things like the Apostles' Creed, and they had these things, these statements of faith and belief, and it was like, this is who we are and what we're about. And,
right. Well, they carried apostolic authority.
Yeah.
But there was a leaning into that's what this is.
Right.
You know, there's this connection of apostle fivefold and family, and we go as that goes, you know. There were all these little things, I think, that were, you know, if you don't watch yourself, you'll find that, oh, there's pieces of the old system still in this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, you know, I think sometimes when you hear those terms, it's not about being a rebel and necessarily doing the opposite.
Right.
It's not, what we're doing is not to be rebellious,
mm-hmm.
and say whatever that is, what's the opposite of it, and that's what we're going to do.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it has nothing, because there are things, I'm sure, we still, you know, we gather, you know, every week, we have worship, I mean, it's not like completely, you know.
I think on the outside, it would be easy to look at our church and think that, oh, it's just
a church.
What's different?
In some ways.
What's changed?
Yeah.
You know? But then when
you get in the room
and you know, especially for people who have, I think, been with us from the beginning, could attest to that too, that actually, like, it's true that when we say we just want the Lord, that's it.
Yeah.
We want his presence.
I was having a conversation with Stephen, who, you know, we just hired, and you know, he even, you know, talked about the idea that everybody wants spontaneity until you're in a room where spontaneity is rules over the room.
Right.
And he said, like, you know, he said, in a good way, there's a growing in the fact that, oh, this is really going to be what the Lord wants, and there isn't a format to that, and that is stretching.
Yeah.
That is stretching.
Yeah.
Especially for church leaders.
Yeah.
You know, when you're, you know, because church leaders, you know, being a pastor of a church means, you know, before you preach, you're checking the lyrics on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
You're making sure the worship team sounds good. You're making sure service clicks off at the end of a 5-minute countdown.
Yeah.
All those things. And all those things die at presence.
Yeah.
And you end up going, man, we did worship for 2 hours. Nobody sang a song.
Yeah.
We sat in a room for 45 minutes and music played. There was no lyrics. There was no.
Yeah.
Or we felt the move right into a message and there was no worship at all.
Right. Yeah.
And you're like, and it just, it is church, but it isn't.
Right.
It's not. You know what I mean? It's what we were designed to do, which was to lean into the Spirit.
Yeah. And like most people probably don't realize this. You and I know this because we were on the worship team. But like Braden will plan a couple songs. He'll have 3 songs, kind of a tentative set list.
Yeah.
We might do one of them. Everything else is spontaneous. Yeah.
And sometimes those 3 songs don't come till Sunday.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Sometimes the 3 songs on the set list don't come, and that's not laziness.
Yeah.
That's out of we haven't felt what he wants us to lean into yet.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's a hard thing.
Yeah.
You know, especially if you're a musician. Yeah. You show up and you go, okay, what's the set list?
You've got to be able to play with no, basically the set list is whatever the Holy Spirit says in the moment.
Yeah.
You know?
And even some of those things, you know, it's not rebellion, but it is the ability to continue to stretch.
Yeah.
So that when he asks you to do things, there is no hesitation into those moments.
Yeah.
And year two was a lot of that dying to what we're not. And, you know, what we're not is that kind of modeled, planned, you know, I've heard the term in other podcasts or different things of like planning center church. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not that planned, you know, concept of this is when it starts, this is where it ends, this is when it ends, you know. You know, I mean, if you're trying to build a big church, having 2 or 3 hour services isn't your model.
No, it's a terrible
it's a terrible model.
terrible model.
But you know, that's not even planned.
Yeah.
If our service needed to be 30 minutes or 10 minutes.
Well, we've had services where worship is like
It's been 45 minutes of intense
presence.
And he always says, we're done.
He's active. He's engaged. It's very clear. It's evident where the Lord is, what he's doing in the room. And all of a sudden he's like, that's good. We don't need a message tonight.
Yeah, we will. We are done. We'll stop here because I'm not looking to add what I want to do into what he's trying to do.
Yeah.
You know, because if I add to it, I'll have to maintain what I add.
Yeah,
whatever we add into the service, we'll have to maintain.
Yep.
Whatever programs or ideas or concepts that don't come from him is something I'll have to constantly maintain.
Yeah.
And I'm just not that talented to do that. You know, I'm not that talented for that. And so, you know, that's really like to define year two, it would be finding all those pieces of us and all those things that we weren't.
Yeah.
And that was almost worse than leaving the system because you die to a lot of dreams.
Right.
You know, you die to a lot of, you know, I mean, you know, it's not unknown, you know, you being my best friend, how many nights in car rides or prayer services we had dreams about what Beloved would be.
Yeah.
And those died.
Right. Yeah.
A lot of those dreams died. That felt at the time, man, we're doing it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And those dreams have shifted and changed and grown and molded into the kingdom.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it really takes humility to plant a church and start doing this thing with the understanding, like a continual ongoing thought and understanding that maybe I don't really know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And maybe everything I thought this is supposed to be or what we're supposed to do isn't.
Right.
And so you learn to hold those things loosely, those dreams, your goals, all those things. You dream with the Lord. You don't stop doing that.
No.
But you hold them loosely and say, Lord, this is what I think.
Sure.
What do you think?
Well, because my dream is you.
Right.
At the end of the day, my dream is to be with you.
Yeah.
And my dream is to look into your face and then to encounter you.
Yeah.
And so the rest of it kind of just becomes a whole idea of, okay, whatever the rest looks like, great.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter to me.
Yep. Big church, little church, nice building, terrible building.
Yeah.
Whatever that looks like. Well, are you here?
Yeah. That's, and the interesting really thing is, like, throughout the Gospels, there's this constant narrative of the apostles trying to correct Jesus and his vision, except for John. Except for John the Beloved.
Wow.
You never hear John going, no, let's not do it like that. You know, he talks about destroying a city, but it's because that city doesn't love Jesus enough.
Yeah.
The only time John gets, you know, angry
is
because people don't like Jesus and he wants to kill everyone for not liking Jesus.
Yeah.
But, you know, it leads back into at the end, the apostles are worried because Jesus says, Jesus says, someone's about to betray me and I'm about to die. You know, and John's cuddled up on the couch with him.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it's the wildest thing. And it leads to the reality that on the cross, you know, the only person left in Jesus's ministry other than his, you know, his mom and Mary Magdalene is John.
Yeah.
Really.
Yep.
I mean, I know some other people join in, but John's the only close-knit person there that remained.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Because I think his ministry or the reality of his life had nothing to do with what Jesus was trying to accomplish, rather Jesus himself.
Right. Yep.
And the cross only mattered to him because it was Jesus on it.
Sure.
And the ministry only mattered to him because it was Jesus doing it.
Yeah.
And that's radically different, man,
than
everyone else going, okay, well, how are we going to function? How are we going to do this? How are we going to, you know, build this thing out? And John's like, wherever Jesus is.
He's like, you want to chill for a little
bit?
You
want to die? Great. Die. You want to live? Great. Live. Yeah. I don't care.
Yeah.
Wherever you are, that's where I'm going to be.
Yeah.
You know?
That's so good.
And that's different.
Wow. So if year two was primarily about kind of discovering who we're not and shedding off still some of those things that we, ideas and dreams that we maybe carried with us, would you say that year three then has primarily been about kind of stepping more, not as much into who we're not, but actually into who we are?
Completely. Yeah. I'd say, you know, the last quarter of year two and all of year three has been firmly planting who Be Love Company is in our region.
Yeah.
In our people, in us as leaders, in every area.
Yeah.
You know, and Yahweh aligns things perfectly.
Yeah.
It's just the nature of his character.
Yeah.
You know, and so many things came into play, whether it's, you know, the real, you know, relational connection, even for me, of having a spiritual father like Mark Casto.
Yeah.
You know, kind of, you know, really moving into being the river that we're a part of now, you know, and all the things that we're connected to, and really leaning into really our namesake, which is, you know, Be Love, it's beloved identity.
Yeah.
Which wasn't, you know, we didn't plan those two things being together like that, but,
right.
You know, the message of our house, you know, as I've talked about, is righteous sonship, which is really, it's a piece of beloved identity. That you are the beloved of the Father. And year three was really fully leaning into saying we are going to be who we're called to be.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, one, to be a kingdom family that's rooted, that is, you know, that, and that raises really the banner of beloved identity in our house, in our region, in our city of Chattanooga, whatever that is, you know, that's who we are. And that's who, how we're going to act. We are going to resemble and look like Jesus.
Yeah.
We're going to have a group of people, as scary as it may sound, to say that if you've seen me, you've seen the Father, which sounds terrifying.
Yeah.
But, you know, I can't be, you know, the revelation of mutual indwelling. I can't be in him and him be in me and me not look like him.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it's the reality of what we're called to do.
That's
and called
what
to
this
be.
This is unto.
Yeah. And, you know, and I think there was even at the end of year two and year three is, to get to this place, I believe, to fully make the transition into this river and into what, you know, really, in our opinion, is the whole full true gospel, is the full dying of fear of man.
Yeah.
Is the fullness of, man, we're just going to do it.
Yep.
And if all of us have to, you know, go start making biscuits at Bojangles, you know, Monday through Saturday.
Yeah.
To do it, you know what I mean? Like, I'll eat, you know, I'll go make bow rounds all week and come in here on Sunday and be who we're called to be.
Yeah.
I refuse to allow anything to, you know, eliminate that.
Yeah.
You know, and for us and even for my parents to fully lean into that concept, that idea as leaders. And, you know, for my parents to do this, not that they're old, they're young, but to do this so far into the journey of ministry.
Yeah.
To be 30, 35 years in.
They had a pretty cushy thing going.
To say, you know, we're going to die to self here. We're going to die to nice buildings in a sense that, you know, I mean, we've been in here in the summer and the air's gone out.
Yeah.
We've been here during the rainy season and we have a tin roof and you can't hear a thing.
Yeah.
You know, and Yahweh's blessing us now with a new building and all these things that are coming. But, you know, all that has come on the heels of discovering who we are.
Yeah.
And those things, we were never hoping those things were the promises of discovering who we are.
Right.
Having a new building, us growing, you know, all these things. It was never, man, when we discover who we are, we know that's going to come. That wasn't the plan or the purpose.
Right. Yeah.
The purpose was simply him. This is all happening because of it.
Yep.
But yeah, year three, you know, and even this podcast and communities, it's all been this like, it's all been, I believe, like circling to this moment. And, you know, we've talked about now for a couple months, even, you know, at the beginning of the year of, you know, you and my dad both receiving words, you know, you feeling the inkling of this taking 3 years to develop.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad, you know, in prayer time, hearing the voice of Yahweh tell him, what if I take 3 years to build this? And that was, you know, almost 2 years ago now.
Right.
That was after year one.
Yeah.
You know, not really knowing what that fully meant, but what if I take 3 years to build this? Two words from two people on our staff, you know, basically telling us, and it's funny because you hear those things, but you don't know what that means fully.
Right. Yep.
You know, but like to see 3 years come and then now all this stuff is kind of coming where we have a foundation to be who we are. There's something beautiful to be said, And I believe this is where we're at as a kingdom family, where someone new can walk into the room and there's no place they can sit that they're not hitting the culture of who you are.
Sure.
They can talk to anyone that's a part of our kingdom family,
yep.
and you trust them to show that person the message, the culture of which we have in our house.
Yep.
You know, that's a beautiful thing to have.
Yeah, it is. I think we are about out of time, but this feels like a two-parter to me.
Yeah.
And so I think on our next episode, I think we'll continue talking about culture and kingdom family and community and a lot of what has developed as a result of, like you've said, like as a result of us discovering who we are and really, you know, what it
means.
What this all means.
Awesome.
Great.
Sounds good. This was great.
Awesome. This was great. Yeah, thanks for being here.
Hey, man, listen, anytime I can stop by, I'll give you all the time I need to.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, and we love you all, and we'll see you next week.